Critics looking into Mayor Curry's pension reform proposal say the numbers don't add up. We'll crunch those numbers and take your calls just ahead. Good morning. And live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live here at 9. Also, never miss a show. Download the WJCT app. Listen anytime. And stream the audio of this program now live on our Facebook page. Just ahead, Labor attorney Tad Delegal takes a look at the pension reform fix. Will City Council pass it? What are the concerns? Get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, it's our book club on the show. Book club leader Stacy Goldring tells us what we're reading this month and where you can get your copy. Also, it's Women with Heart. We'll tell you all about this month's honoree, all of that and more ahead. But first this hour, Mayor Lenny Curry last week presented his city employee pension reform plan to the Jacksonville City Council. Curry says the plan will save the city money, and over time solve Jacksonville's long-running and ever-growing fiscal problems. However, critics are raising alarms about the plan. They say over time the pension fix will end up actually costing much more than first meets the eye. Labor and employment attorney Tad Delegal has been looking into the proposal. He frequently represents public employees in pension matters. He's also the incoming president of the Jacksonville Bar Association. He joins us now. And Tad Delegal, thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you, Melissa.
And here's our question to callers. What are your questions and concerns about the city's pension reform fix? It's being sold as a plan that will get Jacksonville's financial house in order. Critics say it might actually cost us many more millions over time than we can afford to pay. We want your calls and questions, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax or weigh in on our Facebook page where the show is streaming live right now. And Tad Delegal, you're a longtime advocate for employees that take a public pension. You represent them. You're the incoming president of the Jacksonville Bar. And according to you, your analysis of this pension situation and the proposed fix, the city stands to save money in the short term, but pay way too much in the long term. Is that a good way to sum up your criticism of this?
Well, sort of. That was the real plan here. Initially, the mayor had said, we're going to pay, we'll save money in the short run and then pay a lot more in the long run. And that made sense in some ways. We've got a lot of services that need to be funded. But last week, for the first time, the mayor released some numbers. And that's been after a year of this going on. And those numbers showed that any savings are just minimal. And they're almost infinitesimal savings. And they're only for the first 3 years. And then after that, when you add both the additional pension costs that he's creating and you add the huge increases in salaries, you're not saving anything after the first 3 years. You're costing a lot more. And then once this tax hits, starting in 2031, the total net cost of this is at least $4 billion and maybe up to $6 billion additional dollars in taxes and cost for this pension fix. And at this point, I just don't see how it's worth it.
Now, your argument is that the administration failed to take into account a number of unavoidable costs over time that will build and build. What are those unavoidable costs that you say they're not factoring in?
Yeah, I think the main thing is this. And pension issues are tough. But in 2015, the task force of which I was a member and the city council and the city came together and we came up with a bunch of changes to the pension plan for the police and firefighters. We increased the number of years to retire from 20 to 25. We got rid of the guaranteed interest rate on the drop program. We got rid of the guaranteed COLA. We made a lot of changes that really brought the cost of the pension down from about 27% to about 12%, or really 10%. So all those have been jettisoned under this new plan. In fact, what Mayor Curry is proposing is putting all the existing employees back in the most expensive pension plan that we've ever had, getting rid of all the reforms, and then all new employees, giving them a 25% match, but and which is huge. Nobody has heard of a 25% match for a 401k. It's not a match, actually. The employee only pays 10%, and the city pays the police and firefighters 25% of payroll. That's huge. Mm-hmm. And frankly, it just doesn't look sustainable to me and to a lot of people who've looked at this.
We'll go to your calls on the pension proposal that City Council will soon take up and potentially pass into law. The number to join us, 549-2937. Now, this, as you said, this has been a long-running thing. We've been everyone with an interest in this has been waiting for details. Now that the details are available, City Council will dig into them as well, and they're raising questions. But in the end, would it be politically too difficult for them to vote this down, given that Mayor Curry said, look, this is the best solution we have available right now, and we have to do something? We have this massive unfunded liability in Jacksonville that's eating away at our budget and a host of areas. You know, what about the politics of this?
Well, the politics... And Mayor Curry's been masterful at the politics. What he's done is somebody had said he took this in 10-yard increments. First of all, it came out with just sort of the vague outlines of a plan. People signed on. Then he went to the city council, and the city council signed on to the vague outlines of the plan. Then he went to the Florida legislature, and they signed on. Then he went to the voters and got them to sign on.
And those
on.
Are all really heavy lifts.
Heavy lifts.
Yeah.
Then he went to the unions and got them to sign on. But at no part of that process did he ever reveal how much this is going to cost. And as he kept going, the cost got bigger and bigger and bigger. And then he's 90 yards down the field and suddenly says, oh, by the way, these are the cost. And I think at this point, it is difficult for people to stop and say, hey, maybe this isn't a good idea. And also, you put in so much work, it must be a good idea. So hopefully we're going to have the ability to stop and evaluate this.
Okay, which is what you're calling for. And we'll go to your calls on this in a moment at 549-2937. Now, one report looking at this says if the city sticks with the current contribution schedule, the pension plan for police and firefighters would be fully funded by the year 2035. That would require a big increase in contributions that the mayor's team says would necessitate either a big tax increase or drastic cuts in city services. Is that what you're saying is the only way to address this in the long run, Tad Delegal? Cuts in city services and or a tax hike, which, of course, is a tough sell to voters.
I don't think so, because, frankly, what the mayor is planning, and part of his plan, he's saying we can't put the money in the pension, but instead he is putting additional funds in payroll, 21% raise for police and fire, a 3% bonus, and he's putting more money into the pension payments than would otherwise be paid. I'm not sure if we use the mayor's planned payments, his cost, we wouldn't just pay off the unfunded liability by 2031 or 2045 mm-hmm. anyway without a new tax. I mean, the numbers are such, and this is the real problem too, that his numbers have been produced in a PowerPoint, and that's it. And so we're trying to make some financial decisions and some complex decisions on things that should be closely analyzed. And frankly, this is just not the way to run a railroad. It's just huge numbers with very little information about what we're doing.
Let's go to your calls. What are your thoughts about the city's pension proposal? Critics say it will actually end up costing Jacksonville too much in the long run. We want to know what you think. 549-2937. Marie on the South Side. Hi, Marie. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, this has been going on for years, and it's always blown me away that these police and firemen that take their lives in their hands every day to protect us, and we fight over how they're, if they even make it to retirement alive, we fight over how much they're going to get. It's unconscionable. It's an ungrateful heart. Please have a heart and conscience and pay these guys more than you're trying to take away from them. It's just not It's unbelievable to me, okay? I'm sorry, but please have a heart and realize they protect us, okay? And do the right thing.
All right, thanks, Marie. Okay, and what about that argument? And that's, of course, the argument the police and fire unions have been making all along. And we're also talking this morning about the city public employee pensions, too, by the way.
Well, no. You know, police and firefighters need to be paid appropriately, and then they need a good pension. What we're saying is keep the same, you know, I think that the current pension, which is very generous, I mean, the revisions to the pension plan made it a little less generous, but for new employees. But still, it is a good, solid pension plan, and it keeps people in place over time, and it gives them some benefits. We're not really talking about shortchanging the police officers and firefighters under either system. The new system is a huge windfall, but I think the current system pays them appropriately.
If you were designing this, how would you design it?
I think you keep what we've got now, and because we've made some solid reforms. And they're reforms that are going to actually decrease cost over time, and they're also going to pay police officers and firefighters and other city employees and give them a decent pension.
549-2937. Tom on the West Side. Hello, Tom. How are you?
Yes, I'm wonderful. How about yourselves?
All right,
fine
thanks.
Morning. Outstanding. Well, my concern about this is consistently, since Mayor Curry started talking about this, is he has been totally fixed on his plan, which he's only been able to give us the vaguest of descriptions and doesn't really kick in till well down the road. And at the same time, it's only part of the financial crisis that faces Jacksonville. As you know, there's that dredging project they're talking about, and the fact that our football stadium is only a couple years younger than the recently demolished Georgia Dome.
Okay, thanks, Tom. What do you think?
Well, I mean, you know, there's a lot of complex issues, but I don't think that the way we solve them is with this little information. I think we've got to really analyze these questions and analyze how we're going to protect the city. One other thing that I think is very important to understand. We have a system now that keeps firefighters and police officers and other public employees in safe in place for a long period of time. And that's important, especially for public safety, because you don't need to be having turnover. One of the real concerns about the Mayor Curry's plan is that it allows people to leave after 3 or 4 or 5 years. And in fact, I think most predictions are that they will do so. And my concern, too, is that we, over time, are going to dramatically have to increase payroll just to keep people on the job.
Okay. And what about the actuarial analysis into this whole matter that was just put out, I think, by the Police and Fire Pension Fund?
Well, yesterday, the Police and Fire Pension Fund released its actuary.
Yeah.
Came up with calculations that are far different from the mayor's. And has suggested that we use a much more conservative approach than the mayor is using. And under his calculations, we don't pay off this debt because we've got an existing debt. The mayor's planning says that we could pay it off by sometime in 2045. The actuary for the police and fire pension plan is saying, no, it's going to take until about 2060. So we've got over 40 years of payments on this, or in the future on this. And if we cost this out to 2060, we're talking about a net cost of probably about $6 billion rather than $4 billion. I mean, it's huge.
And for people, Tad, that haven't followed this very closely, Jacksonville is certainly by far from the only city dealing with this. But what we're looking at is this pension debt is making it difficult, if not close to impossible, for the city to fund other important things. This is a big black hole in the city's finances.
It is. And there's no getting away from that. But the question here is, be clear on this, that was the initial allure of the mayor's plan. We will get some room in the city's finances to pay for this. But if you look at now—
And you're saying in the short term we would, but not in the long term.
Yeah, but if you look at the cost now that he's released— We don't get any immediate relief. The most we get in immediate relief is $18 million over the first 3 years, and that is a drop in the bucket. That's nothing. And after that first 3 years, we have much more in cost. So that's the allure. We get some relief now for a benefit later, but under the new numbers is released, we don't even get the benefit now.
Have you taken this to the mayor's office, your concerns?
I have talked to the mayor's office initially when this came out. I haven't spoken specifically to them. They've got their plan, and they're very closed by it, and they don't really want any input from anybody else.
All right, let's go to calls from the public, though, 549-2937. Lots of calls about a pretty dry topic, yeah. Pension. But that just shows you how engaged our listeners are here on the show. Bill in Mandarin. Hey, Bill, how are you today?
Good morning. Let me offer some commentary. First of all, a correction to the report yesterday from the actuarial. His was really quite liberal in that in the numbers he put in there, he only assumed one market pullback of 15%. Being a stockbroker, we'll have four or five pullbacks over the same time frame that would probably raise the cost. But the other thing, and this is, I thought, was a little bit of a fault of the original study that the good lawyer was on, you really have two separate problems. One is taking care and funding future retirees, which they addressed quite adequately and did a good job. But at the same time, you have to fund and keep funding the current retirees where the checks have to be cut each month. And in a study that we did, we found that that part, which was not addressed, was contributed to a great number of seepage in the increasing of the unfunded liability. That's all. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. And you know, frankly, I understand that, and you have a lot of knowledge on this, but the mayor's plan doesn't do anything about current employees. In fact, it puts all the current employees back on the most expensive plan possible. So I don't think it does anything to benefit us.
Lynn at the Beaches. Hello, Lynn.
Hi. My comment today on the mayor's budget is I belong to an organization. I'm sure you know which one it is, because you had the person who's one of the highest ones as part of the organization speaking on your station recently.
Who is it?
But
I'm not sure.
Well, it's one of the ministers who's part of the city, who's worried about, very concerned, along with the other people involved in this organization, that we should be able, especially after the mayor promised at last year's meeting, that we would be able to reopen or get started with some places for people who enter the city and have no jobs and are really homeless.
Oh, you're talking about eye care.
I'm talking about eye care. That's
okay.
A very important organization, and he didn't come this year. Last year he promised. He was kind of wishy-washy. This year he didn't come at all, and this is a big, big problem in our city. I mean, you know, I'm sure that the mayor, who belongs to one of the churches here in the city, if he were thinking about what the minister there talked about.
But what about the pension? Do you have a pension question, Lynn? Do you have a pension question?
No, I'm talking mainly about putting money aside, some money aside, for these people that are in the streets when it's as freezing cold as it has been the last couple of months. They have no place. Their children, they're sleeping on concrete. And
yeah.
He did promise that last year that he would come this year, but this year he totally said he wasn't coming, and there's been articles in Folio and so forth.
Yeah,
so.
Sure. Okay, thanks for that. And she's referring to iCare's big interfaith assembly, the Nehemiah Assembly. Mayor Curry didn't appear at that. It ruffled the feathers of all of the faith communities who are trying to press him and the city on how to fund more social justice-related concerns in Jacksonville. And the mayor all along has said, look, we can't really do things like that until we solve this pension crisis.
Yeah, but he's been doing that with a lot of different things. And he's been claiming that there would be some relief on the city budget if this plan is passed. But the recent numbers show that there's virtually no relief. There's at most $18 or $19 million, which is probably going to be eaten up in other administrative costs. So that argument, the argument that he's been making for this pension plan all along, just isn't there. It's not there with the numbers.
We're getting so much feedback from everyone listening. James emails the show, look, police and fire are underpaid already. They are on call all hours of the night. Wake up on Sunday mornings while citizens are on R&R. And the police department is under the microscope every time they make an arrest. Give them the absolute best pension plan possible. I bet most people don't care paying a few cents more per citizen. That's James emailing the show. And let's go to Jeff. He's in Mandarin. Hey, Jeff, thanks for calling. Good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, I would like to comment as a question inside my comment, is that how about the pensions that are first of all, I'd like to make a comment that for public service, it seems like that the public ends up serving these people for the rest of their lives. I mean, I want to talk about the golden parachutes, the ones that draw two, maybe three pensions, doing the same job for like 20 or 30 years. And it seems to me like no matter what happens to the economy, their pensions keep going up. It seems like that there's an imbalance here between the average citizen and the people that are in so-called public service.
Sure. Thanks, Jeff. Ted Delegal.
Well, you know, there's all value judgments to be made. You know, how much do you pay people to do a very difficult job? How do you reward them? I mean, the theory of a defined benefit pension is you pay them a certain amount of money, but you really reward them in the back end for doing a dangerous and difficult job that creates a lot of health problems generally for them.
What about his comment, though, that a few people perceived by the public to be sort of scamming the system? That didn't help make the case.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can always bring up criticisms and this and that and the other. But the reality is that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about either continuing with a plan that has been greatly scaled back and is much more conservative than it used to be, or going with a plan now that the mayor proposes that pays police officers and firefighters 25% of their salary, sticks 25% of their salary in city for in 401ks, plus their 10%. And that is much higher than any private sector employee could ever get. And plus, we're giving them 21% raises, 3% bonuses. It's a very, very rich plan that the mayor is trying to sell. So this is not whether or not you think police officers or firefighters are overpaid or underpaid. This is a question of what plan we go with and what is good, makes good sense for the city's fiscal health.
Jim on our Facebook page writes, the referendum voters passed gave permission to close up to three pension funds. Which funds will be closed, if any?
Well, that's what the mayor's talking about. He's talking about closing all three of the pension funds and replacing them with this 25% of salary, but he's closing them only for new employees. And for the old employees, he's reinstating all the higher benefits. So it's a very expensive plan. It cost a lot of money. I know that the voters, and hey, I supported the referendum too. I thought this was going to look a lot different than it looks today. I think I was wrong, because once we got the numbers really don't make sense.
Let's do one more call. Chris in Arlington. Hi, Chris. Good morning.
Good morning. It seems as though what Tad is saying is that it's a wash either way. We're not going to have the extra funding. So I'm guessing the implication is that we're going to have to, one way or another, we're going to have to raise more revenue, so increase property taxes or something in addition to this tax to accomplish our goals in the long run, which is to have more money to spend in the city. It just seems to me that either way we go, even if we approve this, Tad's saying we won't have the extra money, and if we don't approve it, then the money that was going to go to the pay raises and everything else in conjunction with it would have to go to the pension. So either way, we're at the same ground zero, and somebody's going to have to increase our revenue stream.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Is that inevitable at some point?
I don't know. It depends on the future growth projections. You know, if we grow ourselves out of this problem, which is really what the mayor is saying, that we're going to have higher growth revenue, and that is his answer. And that may be the case. The other question is, do we go with a plan that is, it looks to be very risky in the long run? And it looks very risky to me, the mayor's plan, because it will, I think, further enhance the cost of payroll, because it will encourage turnover. It will have a lot of unforeseen consequences, and it will not reduce the pension payments for current employees over time. The current plan for police and fire goes from about 25-27% to around 10-12%. And so over time, we're reducing our cost with the current plan. The mayor's plan keeps the cost at the 25%. So for me, I look at this and say, in the long run and in the short run, it just doesn't make sense.
We'll continue to follow it and follow whether the votes are on your side or the other side of this. But in the meantime, thanks for sharing your thoughts with us.
Thank you. Thank you, Melissa.
He's labor and employment attorney Tad Delegal, incoming president of the Jacksonville Bar Association. Much more still ahead later, all about the new master's degree at UNF. But up next, the First Coast Connect Book Club checks out the literary classic, The Stranger. We'll tell you where you can get your copy as we talk to leader Stacey Goldring right after this.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
I'm Joshua Johnson. Next time on 1A, Surviving Your Student Debt. The nation's top lender, Navient, holds about $300 billion of student loan debt. It says it has no duty to give consumers good advice, and the lawsuits are flying. How to dig out of your own student debt. Next time on 1A. Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Join WJCT at Fort Caroline Timucuan Preserve on April 29th to explore the outdoors for International Migratory Bird Day. Kids will have the opportunity to become a National Park Junior Ranger, hunt for nature treasures, win prizes, and more. Clifford the Big Red Dog will be on hand with National Park Rangers, teaching families about how to preserve existing natural habitats. This fun family event is free and runs from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Go to wjct.org/events for more information.
Independent music transcends genre, form, and age. At Indie Endeavor, we endeavor to shine a light in the little explored dark corners of your musical imagination. Everything from new to old, foreign to domestic, electronic to acoustic, we play it all. Indie Endeavor, Tuesdays at 11 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, the literary classic, The Stranger, by Albert Camus, is one of the most beloved books of the modern era, and it's on Stacey Goldring's mind this month. Our book club leader wants everyone to pick up their copy of The Stranger and join our book club. You can get your copy from our partner, the Jacksonville Public Library. But that's not all. We're also talking about a big new movie this month, adapted from a book. It's time to talk books and movies on the show. Stacey Goldring, always good to see you. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you?
And what are your thoughts and questions for our First Coast Connect book club as we talk about Camus' The Stranger? Email us at bookclub@wjct.org. And you're so popular, you're so crazy popular, that email address is just always active these days.
Very busy, very busy.
Because not only do we have the public library as a partner, you also do a physical book group every month at the San Marco Library.
Yes, I do.
Or San Marco Bookstore.
San Marco Bookstore. And it is a wonderful, wonderful group of listeners who have gotten together to discuss books and learn from one another. And really, that's what books are all about, learning from one another. It's just a springboard for learning. And this month, let's talk Stranger. Do you remember reading The Stranger back in the day?
I don't think I ever read it.
Well, yeah. The Stranger by Albert Camus is impossible to discuss on air in the small amount of time we have. As you see, I've just bookmarked a few little pages.
Yeah, it's all, you've got a million little post-it notes on this book.
I really do. So it is actually absurd for me to want to discuss it for you this morning. And I use the word absurd because when people think of The Stranger, they go directly, as I'm sure everyone is doing this morning at 9:35, 9:40, they're thinking, oh, let's talk existentialism. But we're not going to because, au contraire, this is not a book about existentialism. If you leave Melissa's show today, I want you to know that The Stranger is about absurdism. And absurdism is simply this, and you're all going to love me because it involves dessert. The only thing we all have in common, the only thing, is we're all going to die.
Uh-huh.
Okay, now that may be said, however, once we understand that, we understand that we must embrace life. Thus, according to The Stranger by Albert Camus, we have to embrace life. Life is short, so eat dessert first.
That's a good message for our morning.
And that should be the takeaway for The Stranger. Now, if you get into the book, it may sound a little depressing. It's about a man who commits a murder and what happens. But it's not even the story that is so incredible about this book and that has fascinated people for generations. It's that we are under the spell of language with the author Camus, because what he does by the type of verb tense that he uses, as it is in French, so it's translated, so we do lose that, is that almost every sentence captures you in the present tense. So it is like every single sentence stands alone as a story in itself. So you are dragged into the plot. You have no choice, but you become a part of this plot. The other thing that is so beautiful about this book is that the language wraps you up and takes you to this place that you feel so much is happening in very, very, very few pages.
Mm-hmm. It's not a big, thick book.
It isn't. No. And the name of our main character is Mère Sol. And the name in French, Mère means mother and Sol means son. So right there, we have a clue as to what the story is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And the first page, the first sentence of this book is debated hotly in literary circles. And even in the New Yorker in 2012, there was an amazing article because the very first sentence simply states, en français, aujourd'hui, maman est morte, which should translate into, today, maman died, or today, mother has died. By saying has, we have blown the world on fire because we don't know whether she has died or did she just die? Did she die a week ago? And so this whole tension of what's happening and when pulls you through the story. And depending on the translation you read, there are two different translations, you will have a completely different journey. So whatever translation you decide to pick up after hearing our discussion today, you are in good hands. But no, you're either going to read a translation that has a British sensibility or an American sensibility, unless you speak French.
Uh-huh.
Then you get to read the original and you're completely out of my league.
Exactly right. But anyone can be part of the book club. This is what is so cool about our book club. All you have to do is go to the library and mm-hmm. ask for the First Coast Connect Book Club and pick up a copy of Albert Camus' The Stranger. They have extra copies partnering with us on our monthly book club. Or you can come to Stacy's actual in-person
book clubs at the San Marco bookstore.
Now, I know. Now we need to talk about something else quickly because this is on your radar too.
Mm-hmm.
The best-selling book, The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks by Rebecca Skloot. It's being made into an HBO film this month starring none other than Oprah Winfrey. Take a quick listen to this.
Scientists had been trying to get cells to grow outside of the human body, but they would always die. Until Henrietta's cells came along.
I want to write a book about your mother.
Everyone's saying Henrietta Lacks donated them cells.
She didn't donate nothing. They took them and didn't ask.
The hospital is guilty.
And somebody's going to pay.
All right, Henrietta Lacks. Let's talk about this story.
Fabulous book. One of these books that, when you read it, you thought, who'd have thunk it? Mm-hmm. This book came out a few years ago. If you have not read it, I highly suggest reading it before you see the film. It premieres on HBO on April 22nd. But thanks to the HeLa cells, and those are Henrietta Lacks cells that were taken without her permission from Johns Hopkins University back in the 40s.
And she had cancer, right?
She had cancer.
Uh-huh.
She died as a result of that. The cells were grown in the lab as a result of her cells. You can thank Henrietta Lacks if you know your blood type. If you have ever not had the measles or the mumps and you had the vaccine, you can thank Henrietta Lacks. If you have used a beaker or a glass slide in a science experience, who can you thank? Henrietta Lacks. Have you ever seen a photograph of a chromosome? Henrietta. If you don't have polio, you can thank Henrietta. If you know someone who has had in vitro fertilization or gene therapy, you know who to thank. The modern field of virology is born thanks to Henrietta Lacks. Her cells have been in space. If you know someone who has been treated with Herceptin, which is a cancer treatment drug, Henrietta Lacks. Just blows your mind. If you listen to Ira Flatow and you're familiar with gene mapping, Henrietta Lacks, what this woman sells because they refuse to die outside of her, they could grow them without...
There something special about her cells that made it possible for these incredible medical breakthroughs
to occur? They survived, and no other cells could do that, so you were able to experiment with them.
Why did her cells survive and no one else's could? We don't know.
We don't know.
But her cells changed the face of medicine forever.
Forever.
But... they never asked for the family's permission
Right, and that's what's so fascinating about this book is because you're dealing with bioethics. You're dealing with family. As a result of this film coming out, of course, no good deed goes unpunished. If you're a writer or an author, you try to write something good. We now have the grandchild of Henrietta Lacks, Lawrence Lacks, who has public charges against HBO, Skloot, Johns Hopkins, the National Institutes of Health for misrepresentation, exploitation, fraud. There's division in the family. It is unfortunate, but this is bioethics. This is the miracle of modern medicine. This is fabulous journalism, wonderful reporting. This is the good work of a writer trying to do due diligence and get signed releases for everyone. But you know, this is difficult. This is not easy. But if we can just step away from all of that craziness and just acknowledge that what Henrietta Lacks has given to the world is a gift that none of us can ever repay, but we can acknowledge her. And what a remarkable person, and her memory lives on in so many of us. Each one of us, Nemours, at Wolfson, it doesn't matter where you are, you have been affected by Henrietta Lacks.
Read the book, Stacy Says. So you know it's good. The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks with the HBO film this month, and this month's book club selection on the show, The Stranger by Albert Camus. Get your copy from our partner, the Jacksonville Public Library. Thank you. Oh, and go to Stacy's website, chapterendnotes.com, or email her.
Please.
bookclub@wjct.org.
Thank you so much,
Melissa. We'll be right back.
On the next Fresh Air, The Creation of an American Demagogue, we talk with Jeff Gwynn, author of a new book about the cult leader Reverend Jim Jones, who in 1978 led about 900 of his followers to kill themselves by drinking cyanide-laced punch. Jones developed his following as an itinerant preacher, faith healer, and social activist. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
WJCT Public Broadcasting, the City of Jacksonville's Military Affairs and Veterans Department, invites you to The Wall That Heals, which honors Vietnam veterans, April 13th through 16th at Metropolitan Park. The wall can be visited 24 hours a day, open and free to the public. To find out how you can volunteer or submit your pictures, visit wjct.org/storiesofservice.
From jazz to indie music, listen to After Hours Monday through Friday at 9 p.m. only on 89.9 FM. Your community, your world, your music.
Welcome back. Well, they're now the largest generation in the workforce today. According to Forbes, millennials embrace a strong entrepreneurial mindset, and they're often on the lookout for opportunities that can continue to move them up the ladder. This year, UNF is targeting that millennial mindset with a new offering, a new master's degree in communication management. John Parmley, PhD, is professor and chair, Department of Communication at the University of North Florida. Good morning.
Good morning.
Also with us, Dr. Brian Thornton, director of the master's program. Good to see you.
Good morning.
And John, let's begin with you. UNF has really expanded its degree offerings in recent years. This is the latest one.
Yes.
Tell us about it.
So the master's degree in communication management, it's all about being very customizable. So it's very focused on those people who want to be leaders or managers within communication companies, like PR firms, advertising agencies, newsrooms, that kind of thing.
Okay. And so this is collaborative, Dr. Thornton. You're working with other departments across the university.
That's correct.
How is that going to be helpful in making this attractive for people, you know, considering going back for a master's?
Well, I think the good thing about this is that we have a program, as John mentioned, that you can sort of build your own program around it. You can take some courses in the business department and take the courses in communication and combine them together. And I think that's a really exciting thing for an entrepreneur. Rather than have a fixed thing that they have to take this, this, and this, there are a few requirements, but then they can make it fit to their what their needs are. For example, if you're going to be in working in a newsroom, maybe you want to take some courses in business, understanding business principles.
Sure. And you're targeting millennials, right?
Absolutely.
But not only millennials.
Yeah, it's really for everybody. People who have been out in the workforce for 10, 15 years or just 5 years. Some folks will take the classes just straight out of undergraduate.
And this is going to be called the MS in Communication Management.
Right.
You want students to customize the degree to their field, whether it's business, nonprofit management, public health, lots of applications.
Exactly. The master's degree that we have in communication management has five concentrations. So you can basically pick one of those five concentrations. So it's heavily customizable. So if you wanted to do, let's say, be a leader or a manager in a communication company that deals with nonprofit management, we have a concentration for that. Or if you want to do government service, we have a public management concentration. There's also a concentration in leadership. So there's all kinds of different ones, business, leadership, public health. It really can be exactly what you need it to be, totally custom designed.
How much demand are you seeing on the UNF campus for advanced degrees?
It's increasing. You know, there was a time when UNF didn't offer a lot of master's degrees, and it really has increased. And so the graduate enrollment has gone up quite a bit over the past, I'd say, 5 or 10 years.
Wow. And so this is just going along with meeting the demand. You just started offering this?
Absolutely. Just started taking, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And no typical class?
So the 2/3 of the classes they take are in the Department of Communication. And so they're learning things like strategy, metrics, law and ethics, things that can really help them to be leaders in communication companies.
Where can people learn more?
So the best thing probably is to just, you know, Google UNF Department of Communication, and that'll take you to the main website for the department. And there's a link there. They can also go to the graduate school.
It's part of UNF's ongoing expansion. Dr. John Parmley and Dr. Brian Thornton, both of UNF's communications program, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
Almost like deja vu. Almost. Except you remember. You remember every single step of the journey. On the Next Step Judgment, we proudly present Full Circle. Amazing stories about ending up exactly where you got started. Snap Judgment. Storytelling at the beat. Do not miss it.
Sundays at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
asked her, "How do you want to go out?" She answered, "I don't want to go out with a whimper." So that led me to one night suggest, "What if we threw a party for you, like a grand bon voyage?"
Join us for more True Stories Told Live. This week, moms, dads, and cops. That's the Moth Radio Hour from PRX.
Saturdays at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
Presenting Next Avenue, the website from WJCT created specifically for adults discovering life after 50. Visit us at wjct.org/nextavenue. It's where grown-ups keep growing. Sponsored in part by AARP. Real possibilities.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, they exemplify leadership, advocacy, and passion. All through the year, 12 amazing local women here on the First Coast are being honored as Women with Heart by the local group Volunteers in Medicine. And each month, it will be very easy to spot the woman with heart by the beautiful diamond heart necklace they're wearing, created by Beards Jewelers, exclusively for them to wear during their designated month. Now, this necklace is called the Heart of Jacksonville, and it was created to serve as a distinction of their honor and leadership. And as they wear the Heart of Jacksonville all over town, it's a conversation starter as they talk about their month of service. April's Woman with Heart is Susan Toler, Vice President of the Florida Blue Foundation. She joins us now in studio, and yes, she is wearing the Heart of Jacksonville. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
We think of that, the Heart of the Ocean necklace in Titanic. Well, you're wearing the Heart of Jacksonville, and it's just as beautiful. A $7,000 diamond heart necklace. Unbelievable.
It is. It is beautiful. It's heavy.
Is
and
it?
And it carries a big responsibility, not just to wear it with honor and pride, but really, really proud to talk about Volunteers in Medicine this month.
That's right. And so as you wear the necklace around town, you're serving sort of as an ambassador to the mission of Volunteers in Medicine, helping the uninsured.
Yes, yeah? Yes. They, if you haven't seen Volunteers in Medicine, it's a lovely blue building on Duval Street in downtown, and they see they have over 5,000 patient appointments a year and 230 volunteers.
Now, you, of course, are Vice President of the Florida Blue Foundation, and you're also Executive Director of Corporate Social Responsibility, directing the company's philanthropy. So this is a good fit for you.
It is. I'm very fortunate to work for a company that has heart in Florida Blue, and we're a mission-driven company, and we're all about helping people achieve better health, and Volunteers in Medicine does just that. So it's really a perfect fit, and I was honored that they asked me to participate.
Now, what's it been like for you all through April? You're going to wear this $7,000 diamond heart necklace every day.
Yes.
What kind of comments are you getting?
First I've had to find outfits that have a neckline to show it off.
Okay, so yeah, right.
So
sure.
I do a little shopping. The what's great is people definitely ask about it and compliment it because it's so lovely. And it's just a chance to talk about what Volunteers in Medicine is doing. And the thing I talk about the most is that it's for sale. There's a raffle.
That's right.
So they're only selling 150 tickets. They're $100 each. It's a great value. They're going to draw the name next February at next year's luncheon. And you could be the proud owner of this lovely necklace from Beards Jewelry.
Is it going to be hard for you to relinquish it to Miss May? I forget who's coming up next month.
I can't remember. We have some great, great ladies. So.
Yeah. A different woman with heart each month. Will you
yes.
be sad to say goodbye to the Heart of Jacksonville?
I will be sad, but I've been taking such good care of it. I'm so afraid that I'm going to do something to it, you know, because it's not mine. But
oh God, that'd be horrible.
Pay it forward. Yes. That's what I'll be doing.
And you just need to go. Everyone needs to just go to Volunteers in Medicine's website for more about Women with Heart and the mission of Volunteers in Medicine, helping those without health insurance get vital medical treatment in this area. The website is just vim-jax.org. And so, Woman with Heart, Susan Toler, It's so exciting to see you wearing this necklace, and I just can't get over how what a brilliant idea this is, you know.
Well, Cindy Cooper and Mary Pat and all the folks at Volunteers in Medicine do such a good job, and this was a really unique, different, I don't even know what that I'd call it, a fundraiser. It's really an awareness campaign about what they do, to have advocates around the community to talk about their programs they wouldn't have not have had before. And my Every Woman Has an Event, and my event is our Florida Blue Foundation Community Health Symposium that's happening next week in Orlando.
Okay.
And we'll have about 450 people from around the state there with lots of national speakers talking about healthcare trends, and we're celebrating some organizations with our Sapphire Award. So that'll really be the time that I get to talk to a broad group of people about Volunteers in Medicine and what Women with Heart is all about.
Very nice. Certainly spreading the word. Look on our website, too, and on social media later today for a picture of Susan wearing the Heart of Jacksonville. Very, very beautiful. She's Susan Toler, Vice President of the Florida Blue Foundation, April's Woman with Heart. And it's so good to see you, and thanks so much.
Oh, thank you, Melissa.
That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme, composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Download the WJCT app and listen anytime. And next on 1A, how to dig yourself out of student debt. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.